This episode of the Purposeful Work Podcast is our second in a series on NetView, the Network for Vocation and Undergraduate Education, an initiative supported by the Council for Independent Colleges with financial support from the Lilly Endowment. Our first episode featured Dr. David Cunningham, current director of NetView. Give that a listen if you haven't already. This one features Dr. Shirley Rolls, the inaugural director of NetView and leader of the network for its first 8 years. We'll learn a little about NetView's history and growth, its challenges and opportunities, and about Dr. Rolls' own vocational journey. Currently, Dr. Rolls leads the International Network for Christian Higher Education, serving as its executive director. Welcome to the Purposeful Work Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Dick. The Purposeful Work Podcast is brought to you by Pathway U, an online career assessment system that uses predictive science to help you find joy, meaning, and purpose in your career. For more information to join, go to pathwayu.com. That's pathway, then the letter U.com. Dr. Shirley Rolls is our guest on the podcast today. Shirley served as director of NetView from 2009 to 2017. She began her academic career with the University of Detroit Mercy before joining the business and economics faculty at Calvin University in Grand Rapids, Michigan. After chairing that program at Calvin, she went on to serve as dean for academic administration and later as director of Calvin's Lilly Vocation Project. Shirley has the rare distinction of holding graduate degrees from the two rival public research universities in Michigan. Her MBA is from the U of M, and her PhD in college and university administration is from Michigan State. As a scholar, she has published broadly in the areas of business ethics and Christian approaches to business and management. Since 2017, Shirley has served as executive director of the International Network for Christian Higher Education. Thank you, Shirley, for joining us on the podcast.
It's good to be here today.
I love to begin interviews by asking our guests to share a little about their own career journey. So I'm wondering if you can tell us the story of your career up to this point.
I smile when I think about this question, because when I think about it, it really isn't a career. It's really been more of a pilgrimage of unexpected callings. If I think in the big picture, there's been kind of a trio of interests that has guided everything. So they're the little rhythm tones underneath it all. One is about the life of faith and religious understanding. One has been always my love and interest of higher education, particularly independent higher education. And the third has always been my great love of management as a conceptual field. And when I think about where the path has gone, those three themes just kept going, but balanced and were orchestrated in different combinations over time. When I think about where I started, it really comes back to when I was a young undergraduate and worked for the University of Michigan as a career counselor. I got the job, and then it was a really good thing because I sat there and read files all the days trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my own life, along with helping undergrads try to figure out what they were doing with theirs.
I'm curious, did you use any assessments with them?
We did. There were some standard ones like the strong vocational interest inventory that were out at that point. And we did sometimes use those and other ones too. I think a lot of times we spent time thinking with students about, I have a psychology major. What on earth can you do with a psychology major in the world? And helping them explore the different directions that they could go with their academic interests and how to build the bridge from academic interests to some kind of an occupational future. Right. So that was a lot of fun. But, and then Brian, you described the path that I took in terms of working in financial administration for the University of Detroit Mercy, and then became a professor and then an academic dean. And then since 1994, I have never had a job that existed before I had it.
Interesting.
And I think it reminds me of a couple things. One is that it's very hard and probably not even wise to plan these 30, 40 year career paths. because many of the positions we'll hold later don't exist right now. So it's hard for us to project into the future. And I think the other thing that happened to me was that I had to work in a particular context, and in that context, say, here I am with these people. What is needed? Is it something that I can do? And is it something that I ought to do? Do I feel called to it? And so it doesn't look like a very rational career path, but for me, it was the right vocational journey.
Absolutely. And I love how you can see those threads, faith, higher ed, management, all interwoven throughout at every step.
Yeah, they've always stayed, and I think they always will.
In our last episode, I asked David Cunningham to share a little about NetView's history. You were involved from the very beginning during its prehistory, having secured one of the first large campus grants that supported the Lilly Vocation Project at Calvin. Tell us a little about your experience dreaming up that project, securing the funds, and then building that initiative that's still vibrant on Calvin's campus.
I think the first thing I should do is credit the Council of Independent Colleges, because they were already in a conversation with the Lilly Endowment, asking questions about what was needed. And the Lilly Endowment was in a similar thoughtful and reflective period about their own work, saying, we want to be a funder of networks, but we don't necessarily want to be the operator of networks. So the conversation was afoot, and I had been the director of the Lilly Vocation Project, a couple million dollars in grant funds on the Calvin University campus, college at the time. And so, you know, there was an initial conference where there was kind of a Council of Independent Colleges and Lilly coming together, and it was a kind of the look-see conference. Should we build a new national network? If so, what would that look like? What would the mission be? Would anybody here interested in joining that? And so I had an initial very short conversation with Richard Eckman, the president of the Council of Independent Colleges, in the hallway. And I went home, and on the way home said to a colleague in the car, I think that's probably the last Lilly-related conference I'll ever attend. And then 2 months later, by then, they had decided that a new network should begin to be built. And so we worked quietly in the background to say, what should it look like? They recruited me as the first director, said, we don't know if this will work. It's a pilot project. Let's give it a shot. I said, okay, let's give it a shot. Let's see once what happens. And we developed a website. We created an initial frame. And it was 7 months later, in the end of December of that year, we had more than 100 member institutions.
Yeah.
So it was a community of people. That's the thing. It wasn't just me. I was part of it. I was leading certain pieces, but it was a community of people who made this happen.
How much of an experiment did it feel at the time as you were just getting started with that?
Oh, it was a great experiment, because we were trying to design. When you're designing a new network, every network wants to have benefits for the members who join. Otherwise, why would they be there? So what would the benefits be? Well, one benefit was the idea of coaches who could come to their campus and help them with programs. We had to design, what does that look like? Who's a coach? What does a coach do? Will this work? One benefit was going to be small scale gatherings where people, staff and faculty could join for professional development. Okay, so who's going to organize this? What is the theme of this? How will we know if it works? How will we promote it? And then the other big thing we wanted to do in the early years was have our first national conference. Mm-hmm. And all of the logistics of figuring out what's the theme, who might the speakers be, why, what are we trying to accomplish? These were all experiments. It was a blessing that most of them worked, but it was pretty innovative. It hadn't been tried before, and we were building from scratch. So it was pretty entrepreneurial, which was fun.
Yeah, well, I know over the course of your tenure as director, after that first year, the number of member institutions more than doubled in size. You've spoken to a little bit to the benefits that draw institutions I'm wondering, what are some of the examples of the types of changes you've seen on campuses before and after they join?
I think one of the big things that happened was that we gave people a space and a place to ask deep questions about the mission and the goals of the education that they were providing, particularly to undergraduate students. And a good share, in fact, the vast majority of the colleges and universities that joined had some kind of a Christian heritage. But what it came to 100, 150, 200 years later was a question. What's still here? What do we still care about? Our student body has changed. Our faculty composition has changed. What historical memory do we even have of who we were and where we are now? So I think one of the big benefits of change we saw was a reclaiming of the college or university identity, a digging back into their own identity related to their current mission, and then saying, okay, so what does that look like now? What does that look like when we talk about a theology of vocation and calling with our undergraduates now? What kinds of programs do we design, student life programs or new curricular initiatives or programs, first year programs for students? What do we do? We saw a lot of changes. We saw overhaul of first year core courses for students that were all about purpose and meaning in your life, identity in your life. What are your deepest reservoirs of identity? Do they have anything to do with faith? As well as the bridge for sophomores into, I might pick a major, what do I do with this? So concrete applications in terms of career development. We saw curricular changes in development of capstone courses for seniors. We saw a lot of retreats for students to build community, to dig deeply into their own questions of life and calling. Lots of things.
So if someone goes to the site and begins to read about NetView and some of the things that programs that NetView supports, I think an assumption that people have before really educating themselves on it is that it's kind of a way of just adding some nice career development programs and, you know, or a special scholarship or retreat opportunity or something like that. But what you're describing really sounds like a kind of comprehensive transformational change in a lot of ways, at least at some places.
Oh, yes. Yes. This did lead to a lot of change in a number of colleges and universities in terms of curriculum. And I think part of the reason that happened is we spend a lot of time on faculty development and also developing the scholarship to support faculty development, to help faculty dig deeply into these questions in terms of, why am I here as a faculty member? Why am I at this college or university? What do I care about? How do I connect to the mission here? And I think it was the enthusiasm of the faculty members that built back into the development of institutional programs. Well, once you get a faculty member excited about this, about this is all about vocational journey and calling, and they see it in their own lives, they're so excited to share it with students. It does change institutions.
Amazing. Every new organization or network encounters challenges as they grow and become established. What were some of the key challenges that you faced as NetView was first emerging?
I would say the first challenge we had was the worry of institutions that the colleges and universities were saying, so what definition about a theology of calling are you using? And they were either worried that they didn't fit or they couldn't fit. And so we used the response that the Lilly Endowment had used for several years beforehand, which was to say, that is our question to ask. That is your question to answer. So we didn't give them an answer. We said, tell us what a theology of calling and vocation comes to in your context, with your students, in your location, with your history. You tell us. And it took a while. We kept working at it to communicate that message, that there was great freedom in what they could possibly talk about. I remember one college early on in the upper Midwest that said, well, we don't think even from our particular faith-based roots way back, we don't think we ever had a theology related to calling. I said, oh, come on. You are a faith-based network of churches. You've had practices of certain kinds since forever. They didn't come from no place. Practices are evidence of a working theology. What is it? They went and did their own digging and they came back very enthused. That was our first big challenge, but it worked. Second thing was we had very rapid growth from the beginning. So we were constantly trying to figure out, how do we manage this thing that is obviously desired and people are joining quickly? You know, how do we build staffing? How do we build staff capacity? How do we train people to do this well? How do we keep up excellence of quality? How do we build an advisory council, institutional liaison, so there's a connection everywhere? So we were building systems as fast as we could.
Yeah, your entrepreneurial spirit was really tapped, it seems like, in order to, you know, it's like building a startup. You have to figure out on the fly what all you need.
I mean, you know, some famous management theorists have talked about, you know, building the airplane while you're flying it.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we did every day.
Yeah. That's fantastic. How did your time directing NetView influence your own understanding of calling and vocation, both in general or in a kind of theoretical way, but also personally?
I think in general, just because I was positioned to work with colleges and universities from so many different faith-based and theological orientations, that it really broadened and deepened my appreciation for the diverse range of expressions of theology and faith that are across the United States. It's extraordinary. Listening to Lutheran and Methodists, listening to Catholics and saying, oh no, these are the Sisters of Charity. They're going to do this different than the ones that come out of the Holy Cross Order. And just listening and being privy to those conversations, you see this marvelous chorus of people who are learning to sing together about this. It really broadened my sense of the range of understanding. I think on a personal level, it enhanced my appreciation for mystery. Mystery about God, about surprising connections that I wouldn't have imagined, about where this work would go. It was really wonderful to say, I'm here to help lead this project, but there are other forces that are much greater than me that are involved in the works. And some of these are divine and some of these are human, and it's all mixed up together. Lots of mystery about that. And I think the third thing I would say is that it really, in some of our work, helped me to grow in interfaith understandings. Mm-hmm. The last book that we worked on when I was director, Hearing Vocation Differently, was, you know, it's really valuable to listen to people from Islamic and Jewish and Buddhist traditions and to compare notes and say, you know, some of your themes have some similarities to some of the themes that I had as a person of Christian faith. We should talk more with each other. So it was very good.
Excellent. What is, or what will be, the lasting legacy of NetView?
Well, there are hopes, and then there are realities. I think one of the legacies of NetView, I hope and I believe is the case, is the education of different kinds of people. And I'll give you a little tiny story. And several years ago, my mother-in-law died. She had a stroke. She had about 3 days between the time of the stroke and her final passing. And during that time, a music therapist came in, sang with the family around her bedside. And it was beautiful and it was just right. And I went out in the hall and I said to the person, I said, thank you so much. I said, that was beautiful. And she said to me, well, you know, I decided this was my calling. As soon as she said that, I said to her, where did you go to college? And she went to Augsburg College in Minnesota, one of the stalwart NetView members. And I said, you got that from Augsburg College, didn't you? And she said, well, yeah. She said, I don't remember any particular course. She said, but it was just kind of always in the air there. And she picked it up. So that's what I hope, is that, you know, the graduates of our programs several years later are deeply shaped as people in terms of where and how they contribute. And then beyond that, I think it's just, it's affirmed some differentiation of private colleges and universities, independent colleges, in terms of we have something special that we're working on here. And I think it's the preservation of saying really reasonable and good to think about questions of religious faith in the context of education that we're working with, to be articulate about them, to invite students from a variety of perspectives to talk about these matters of commitment and belief and perspective that matter deeply to them. We may not all agree, but let's invite the conversation and deepen the understandings. I think that's going to be a hallmark of these colleges and universities for a long time to come.
Yeah, it does speak to the transformative power of a culture, you know, a campus culture where you're in a community that's engaging these questions together with this sort of shared commitment toward deeper understanding and growth. And so being part of a network that really helps foster and facilitate that, I imagine, is really rewarding.
Yeah. And I remember one of the very last conferences of this network that I directed, I remember the occasion where a couple of young faculty members stood up and they said, well, I'm a Lilly baby. In other words, they grew up in the very young years of this network. They learned some things, and now they were turning around to become leaders in this network. So that's how it's going to continue to go on.
Absolutely. Shirley, tell us what you're up to now. What is the International Network for Christian Higher Ed, and what are your goals as director of that network?
Well, the first thing I should say is that I failed at retirement. Definitely, because there's this wonderful network. I've been a member of it for a long time, but they had a director. And then the director left and they needed a new one. So here I am. This network is a network of Christian colleges and universities, primarily universities on six continents. Our goal as a network is to inform them about the work that each of them is doing, because their work is not contained by national boundaries. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have Dutch universities who are doing work in the Philippines and in India and South Africa, and, you know, U.S. institutions that are reaching to India and Uganda, and Ugandan institutions that are reaching other U.S. students. It's all mixed up. So we try to serve them by providing information, connections, and then helping to equip them to live more deeply into their mission. So we do conferences, we provide newsletters, we have online resources, we do book reviews, we provide webinars, all that are geared toward their continuing deepening of their capacity to deliver on being Christian institutions of higher education.
Shirley, thank you so much for all of your contributions over the course of your career. I mean, you have your own legacy that runs parallel to those of the organizations, the networks that you have led and contributed so much to. So grateful for that.
It's been the joy of my life to do it. I mean, of course you need to be compensated. You need to make a living, but you can't do this kind of higher education work. You can't do it for the money, that's for sure. And the greater joy is being called to it and being allowed to have space to do it.
Thank you so much for sharing your experience today on the podcast. It's been such a joy to talk with you.
Goodbye for now, Brian.
We've been hearing this episode from Dr. Shirley Rolls, inaugural director of NetView and currently the executive director of the International Network for Christian Higher Education. This is the second episode in a series with guests from NetView and its member institutions. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to this episode of the Purposeful Work Podcast. The Purposeful Work Podcast is brought to you by Pathway U. Kyle Christensen is the producer of the podcast. To learn more about Pathway U, go to pathwayu.com. And as a thank you for listening to this episode, Pathway U is offering a 20% off coupon code. When you check out, simply enter the code PURPOSEPOD. I'm your host, Brian Dick. We'll see you next time.